It's weird being in Boston as the film Spotlight opens this Friday. Boston was the epicenter of the Catholic Church abuse scandal detailed in the film. The other day, a colleague said, "Oh yeah, Father Gagan, one of those the church knew was an abuser, he was our priest. He'd come over every night and tuck us in." The movie tells of how the Boston Globe investigative team unearthed the scandal. In this scene, Michael Keaton, playing team leader Walter Robinson, tells the paper's new editor, Marty Baron, played by Liev Schreiber, how Spotlight works.
Right now, we're really just trolling around for our next story.
How long does that typically take?
Hard to say. A couple of months.
A couple of months?
Yeah, we don't like to rush it. Once we settle on a project, we can spend a year or more investigating it.
Now, it sounds like Baron's going to balk at that. Instead, he tells them to follow a lead. The film's heroes are the abuse victims who tried to get someone to listen to them, the Armenian lawyer who did. Walter Robinson actually missed the story at first, but in tracking it in 2001, his team comes as close to movie superhero status as reporters in rumpled khakis can. Walter Robinson, known as Robbie, is now an editor-at-large of the Boston Globe. Robbie, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And you're looking a little less rumpled than some of us remember you. I want to start off by asking, I mean, you are a reporter's reporter. What's it been like to suddenly find yourself the story?
It's a little strange. Tom McCarthy, the director, found a brilliant way to not only bring real newspapering to a film in a way that it's the way we really do things. You know, we are not heroes. We are people who rummage around in the dark, and sometimes we find something. But through our eyes, he managed to convey the pain, the suffering, and the enormity of the abuse that happened to thousands of children. And he did it in a film about newspaper people that lets them tell their stories in a way that perhaps couldn't be told if a filmmaker set out to do a story just about the survivors or the victims.
It's almost as if we see them through your horrified eyes.
That is correct.
You lead a team, including Sasha Pfeiffer, our former colleague at home station WBUR, Michael Resendez, Matt Carroll. Talk about the place and time we are when this is happening, both how powerful the Catholic Church is in Boston and how, in a funny way, unpowerful without the technology we have today, reporters were.
Well, this was at the dawn of the internet era. And you know, our stories went public in January of 2002. If we had done them 3 or 4 years earlier, they wouldn't have had nearly the same kind of impact because stories just didn't generally go beyond your own geographic area. We were all cognizant all the time of how powerful an institution the church was. All four of us on the team had grown up Catholic. We understood the primacy of the church, the importance of the priests. All of our families were part of the social fabric of the church. In my case, you were expected to go to Catholic grammar school, for instance.
Well, it's just amazing to see. I mean, it's only decades after the Irish Need Not Apply signs. And now this is a church that, you know, is so all-powerful and a town in which everyone seems to know everyone. So you as a reporter might also find out your golfing partner and lifelong friend was representing the church against some of the victims.
Not surprising at all. And, you know, the power of the church, particularly in Massachusetts, if there was legislation they didn't like, it was killed. Period. If there was legislation they wanted passed, it passed.
Which is why maybe two outsiders are at the heart of getting this story told, Mitchell Garabedian, the Armenian lawyer. The other is Marty Baron, a Jewish guy and new to town.
Right. And there's a wonderful scene in the film where one of the church's lawyers is trying to sort of understand the arrival of this new guy from Florida. And he says, so he's Jewish, the first Jewish editor of the Globe, and he's not married, and he's never been married, and he doesn't like the Red Sox. What's going on here?
By the way, Marty Baron now at the Washington Post. What I love about the film is that it gives credit to reporters who were reporting on this before your team bit into it. There was a Boston Phoenix reporter.
Sure.
Kristen Lombardi.
Oh, yeah.
And also Eileen McNamara, giant columnist at the Boston Globe.
And, you know, back 4 years earlier in 1997, both David Armstrong of the Globe and Andrea Estes then with the Herald did some pretty great reporting. But the wall that all of them hit is that these were allegations. People who were victims were readily coming forward and saying, look, if it happened to me and it happened in another parish, surely the archdiocese knew about it. And that was the root of the lawsuits in which these documents, Gagan's, the priest's personnel files, were under seal.
Let's talk about these documents for a second. You mentioned a priest, Gagan. He was one of the priests, it was discovered, had been moved around by the archdiocese, even though they knew he'd been abusing children.
That's correct. That was the allegation. And Marty Baron came from Florida. In Florida, virtually every record is public. It has the best public records law in the country. He comes to Boston, and his very first day, he said, I read Eileen McNamara's column yesterday about the 84 lawsuits against this one priest, and it says the records are sealed. Have we gone to court and asked to have those records unsealed? And, you know, I think he was greeted with a sort of collective deer in the headlights look because nobody had actually thought of it. Mm-hmm. This is a great argument for having a pair of fresh eyes on almost any issue.
Well, and here's what happens. The Globe successfully sues to unseal documents, but meanwhile, there are documents that are public, as the Armenian lawyer Garabedian tells reporter Mike Resendez, who's incredulous. He's played by Mark Ruffalo. Let's listen.
And so I could just walk into that courthouse right now and get those documents?
No, you cannot, because the documents are not there.
But you just said they're public.
I know I did, but this is Boston, and the church does not want them to be found. So, they are not there.
Mitch, are you telling me that the Catholic Church removed legal documents from that courthouse?
Look, I'm not crazy. I'm not paranoid. I'm experienced. Check the docket. You'll see. They control everything.
Robbie Robinson, what happens when your team is hearing things like that, meeting more and more people who had been abused by priests? Is there a point where you say, I mean, this is just too unbelievable, this is getting scary, how do we accuse people of these kinds of things? What happens?
When we started out, we were looking at Marty's direction at one priest, Gagan, and we very quickly discovered that Gagan was really the tip of a very large iceberg. I mean, we thought it was maybe 12 to 15 priests. In the end, as you know, a year and a half later, it was 250. But when we started to talk to victims, which was the only way into this story, and we realized what had happened to them and that there were a lot more of them than anyone realized, we were so energized to get that story and get it out. We worked for months, 6 and 7 day weeks, to bring this story to the front page.
Good old-fashioned gumshoe, knocking on doors, going to the library, which...
Can you imagine that? I mean, now we do a lot of reporting, you know...
Without leaving your seat.
Without leaving our seat.
So there's that. But also there's the constant... These are personal, horrendous stories that you're hearing. I mean, there's the idea of taking down a powerful institution, but then there's also people. And one of the articles that we found about this was in Pointer, the journalism organization, by Roy Harris, former Globe reporter, who said one of the stories that he missed, because you can't get them all in, was one of yours about a father who as a child was molested, never told anyone until he found his own child was molested. Do you remember that story?
I remember it very well. The father was molested as a young boy by Father James Porter, and it pretty much ruined his life for many years. He left the church. He had lots of emotional problems he had to deal with. And finally, this man had married, he had children, and he decided to give the church a try again, and he was quite successful. He lived in Weston, which is a very wealthy, affluent suburb of Boston, and he and his family started to go to St. Julia's Parish in Weston. And there was a new priest there by the name of Father John Gagan. And Father Gagan took an interest in his son. And then one day he showed up to pick up his son, and his son came running from behind the church in tears, and his son had been abused by Father Gagan. And what a devastating double whammy for two generations of the same family to have this happen. It was, I have to tell you, to be honest, I sat with them in their attorney's office, and I cried. Reporters don't often cry. Look, I'm supposed to be a tough guy. I shouldn't even be telling you this. But it's really tough to be objective. I mean, look, the journalism textbooks used to say objective journalism. you cannot be objective in a case like this. I mean, obviously, you're going to be fair. You're going to get all sides of a story. But you cannot help but be driven to get this kind of a story before the public. So maybe you can do something to bring a stop to this.
Have you been able to talk to that father and son? Is that...
You know, I haven't in a long, long time. I've kept touch with some of the victims we talked to, but I have not. And but now that you raise it, I think I'll probably call, see how he's doing.
Maybe he wants to go see a movie. Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah. Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Walter Robinson, now editor-at-large at the Boston Globe, but his work leading the Spotlight team is featured in the new film Spotlight. Ravi, Walter, thank you.
You're welcome.